Monster Movie Media presents.
Greetings and welcome to Creepy Kingdom, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. And welcome to the 31 creepy days of Halloween. And we have done it. It is today. This is creepy day number 31. Every day this whole month, we've released an episode leading up to this day. Halloween is finally upon us. So happy Halloween. But before we get to this episode's main event, I want to let everyone out there know that on November 7th, that Creepy Kingdom will be holding a meetup at Disneyland. So if you're in a Disneyland area on November 7th, we're meeting up at Trader Sam's at 10 p.m. to midnight. This event will be hosted by myself and Miss Roxy Tart. So, if you're in the area, you definitely want to come by and meet up. You can RSVP by going to ckdlmeetup.rsvpify.com. And if you don't remember that weird URL, you can always check the show notes. Coming up in this episode, Adam Lettern returns to the show to take us on a little adventure, a Halloween adventure, a Los Angeles Halloween adventure. He will be talking about all the Halloween festivities he took part in, including Disneyland, Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Hollywood, and Knott's Scary Farm. So, let's begin. I would like to welcome Adam Lettern back to the podcast. Hello.
I'm glad to be back.
Back for another creepy day.
Mm-hmm.
We live to see another creepy day.
Yes. Live free or die creepy.
Excellent. Live free or die creepy. I love it. So, asked you back on because you just got back from Southern California. You live in Washington.
Oregon.
Yeah. One of those up there. States.
Yeah, kind of the same thing, really.
That was close.
Not so different.
Anyways, you don't live in the area, but you the Los Angeles area, but you visited it recently and went on a wild rampage of all these great Halloween events in Southern California. So I had to have you back on and talk to you, and so you could tell all the Creepy Kingdom listeners all about your adventures.
Yes, many, many, many adventures were had, and they shall be detailed in great detail.
Excellent. Anyways, yeah, let's start off at the motherland, of course, Disneyland. And what's your thoughts of the Halloween celebrations going on over there?
Oh, it was, first of all, it was very, very pretty. Lots of very large, impressive pumpkins were, the biggest thing of note there. For full disclosure, I didn't, unfortunately, get to go to the Halloween party. It was actually completely sold out by the time I was there. And also, my Halloween tastes tend to lean a little more towards the extreme. And so I got to confess that so far Disney hasn't really put anything on the table that's like I'm going to pay another, $60, $70 on top of my park ticket to go to their after hours Halloween party. I mean, I get some people are really into it, but not quite so much my thing. But I did get still experience a lot of Halloween time at Disney, and that was wonderful. Of course, probably the first thing of note is I did get to finally go on Ghost Galaxy. I was excited to do that in forever. And basically, it's your standard Space Mountain. But instead they've like kind of changed some of the video projections and stuff, so you're being chased around by a ghost the entire time. It's pretty cool because like when you're going up, you know, like that initial launch hill, lift hill,
right
at the beginning of the coaster, all, you know, it kind of looks normal at first, and then this giant ghost kind of comes towards you and is staring at you, and then he reaches out his hands, which proceeds to then basically be projected onto the sides of like the lift hill, and like he like touches the lift hill, like the lift hill like sparks red, and there's all this loud like electricity noise and stuff, and then from there you're kind of launched out, and as you go throughout the coaster you see him in like various forms, whether it be his entire body or like his hand reaching out for you, or even just like his like angry eye kind of staring at you. It's really cool. It's like, you know, kind of a nice, albeit quick, update to Space Mountain, and if you haven't gone, it's really worth a ride. It was a lot of fun.
So I don't know if they explain this or not somewhere, but why is a ghost in outer space?
Yeah, you know, and that's really weird because I'm sure, like, I thought there was probably some storyline about it at one point, because, you know, I had done some research on it, but if there was, it certainly wasn't there. It's just basically, the only suggestion that something odd is going on is that when you're, like, kind of going through the queue, like, they have, like, the, you know, like, the kind of the video monitors of, like, outer space and stuff.
Yeah.
And every so while, they'll kind of glitch a little bit and, like, offline and then kind of glitch on again, which is kind of indicating generally that, you know, something was going on, but there's not a pre-show video or something explaining. It's just basically you're going on Space Mountain, but all of a sudden, like, you know, angry space ghost pops up and has beef with you, I guess.
Angry space ghost from Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
He's a little more intimidating than Space Ghost, I would say. Definitely more red, more angry. But they don't give a reason. It's just like, you know, you're on Space Mountain and there's ghosts and stuff. Have fun.
Right on. No, I'm just nitpicking there. No, it sounds awesome. The audio you shared sounds incredible. I think that probably adds to it as well, because I think the score, the music to it, and the evil, monstrous ghost sounds, which I never heard ghosts that sounded like hellish demons before. So that was it.
Yeah, the soundtrack is definitely very menacing and very kind of startling. It kind of adds kind of to the creepiness factor of the whole thing.
It's pretty cool they decided to actually do that to an attraction. I actually even saw there's a sign that says that this attraction may frighten children.
You know, I could see it. Like, I didn't find it particularly frightening, but then again, if you were probably like an 8-year-old, that might be like absolutely terrifying, because it is really fast paced, or like, you know, the music is really loud and really intimidating, and the ghost does look pretty darn creepy. So yeah, I could see that if you were a younger kid who's maybe a little more on the skittish side, it would be probably a pretty frightening experience. And yeah, it's cool to see Disney kind of dip their toe into that kind of thing. It'd be kind of nice to see if they were, like, you know, willing to try something like that out in Florida rather than just keeping it to Disneyland.
Yeah, but you know they won't, so.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool, though. I mean, I was thinking also, like, if they could handle the ride of Space Mountain, don't you think they could handle ghost projections?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very fair point.
That's what I would think. But, you know, at least they're putting warnings up. They're inching in the right direction, so I can't fault them for that. what other Halloween things did you encounter?
Well, of course, like, the other big thing I could think of, but that's really surprising because there wasn't as much Halloween stuff as I thought there would have been. Like I said, there was definitely a lot of Halloween-y decorations on Main Street, so there was that. And, but, you know, I don't really recall seeing any much in the way of decorations in the other lands. Like, they were all pretty standard. There's lots of characters about, but they were also, once again, pretty much in just their normal clothing. So there wasn't anything remarkable there. Of course, like, the other big standout is, without giving it too much away, because I know you're going to get to do it for the first time here in about a week or so, is I did finally get to go on Haunted Holiday Mansion, which was just a wow.
A wow. Okay. Yep. Okay.
I was very impressed. First of all, that the mansion is decorated with like pumpkins and stuff, and it's all kind of made up for Halloween, and it looks very impressive on the outside. And it just, the effects on the inside are very good. It just feels like Well, Ghost Galaxy, while it was a lot of fun, does feel like something that they essentially flipped a few switches in a day or two, and all of a sudden it was Ghost Galaxy. It's very evident a lot more work goes into the Holiday Haunted Mansion. I mean, obviously somebody put in a lot of effort to move it, you know, to move it from, you know, regular Haunted Mansion to Holiday Haunted Mansion. So I was very, very impressed with the work that was put in on that.
Yeah, I think the refurb schedule, I was looking at it, I believe the mansion is down for about a month, and Space Mountain is down for one day to go back from
Right, and that definitely shows between the two attractions that you know, that the Holiday Haunted Mansion is spectacular. I'm sure you're going to love it when you get to go on it. Sadly, I only got to go on it once because I got really spoiled like my first couple of days there, like because like the first day I actually did something I don't think I've ever actually done before. I actually rope dropped Disneyland, so okay. I was there at 8 a.m. and I spent pretty much my entire morning with like no waits for anything, just, you know, just going on. Plus, I had like the advantage that, admittedly, I went to all this by myself, and so you know, I was able just a single rider, you know, a lot of the big stuff. But then the problem is then I took a couple days off to do some of the other stuff, and when I came back, it was like the weekend, because like I started probably on a Wednesday. But when I came back, it was all of a sudden like Friday, or it was actually Saturday, Sunday, and all of a sudden these rides that I was getting on, you know, right away had like, you know, like a 40-minute, 60-minute wait, and I was just too spoiled at that point. I'm like, no,
of course,
no. I went on this after 10 minutes. I'm not going to wait 60 minutes for this. Sorry. And the Haunted Mansion was probably the worst, you know, probably the worst among them because it is kind of a seasonal attraction. It was just the wait time was like really ridiculous, and I wanted to go my final day, but it was pretty much closed the entire time I was there. And then it finally opened when I wasn't paying attention, and then it was instantly like an hour wait.
Wow. We couldn't obtain any fast passes or anything.
For the Haunted Mansion, they were like, you know, come back like 6 o'clock at night. It was bad.
Wow.
Same thing with Ghost Galaxy for that matter too, is it just like the fast pass, like, you know, I probably showed up at like 10 o'clock or so, and I'm like, well, maybe I can sneak in and grab a fast pass real quick. And it's like, well, you can, but you're gonna have to come back at 5 o'clock, and I'm supposed to be like on an airplane at 7, so I'm like, that's probably not gonna
happen. You were doing a little morning of
yeah we had a, we had a really late flight out, and so basically I had I was there with like a family member, and she was actually at a medical conference, so basically she had to go do all the work, I gotta do all the playing. So
nice.
But anyway, so basically I decided, since we weren't leaving until like super late in that evening, that I was going to hustle that out and make, you know, like one last go of the parks.
So cool. Yeah, no, I have yet to experience Haunted Mansion Holiday. I've heard things, people's opinions of it are pretty polarizing. Some love it. I don't know anyone that hates it. I know people that don't like that it takes over the Haunted Mansion. That seems to be what the problem is. So did you miss not seeing the Haunted Mansion?
That's a tough question. I think had I not experienced Holiday Haunted Mansion before, it might have been different, but no, simply because I'd never been on Haunted Holiday Mansion. And like it was kind of something that has like a long backstory with me, because when I was like a young kid, probably, you know, growing up, probably my favorite film was Nightmare Before Christmas. I had like a real love affair with that movie until it became like, you know, kind of like the like rallying cry of like every goth and emo kid who thinks that nobody understands them. Thanks to Hot Topic.
By the way, I gotta tell you, I was alive for that. I was in high school when Nightmare Before Christmas came out, and it was immediately that film, right from the beginning, because I hung out with a lot of goth people, so I can tell you that.
Really, that's kind of fascinating, because before I kind of grew up, because you grew up in California, like in a bigger population base, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I grew up in like Bend, Oregon, which is like this tiny, tiny little, at the time it was like a tiny, tiny little town. And it was interesting because like Nightmare Before Christmas came out, and then promptly disappeared and was forgotten about, and it was something that was kind of cool because I was like something I was into, and right. It's like it wasn't that big of a deal at that point. And then all of a sudden it started showing up in like Hot Topic at some point, and then it just kind of like exploded and like everybody was into it, and it was like years after the fact.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. It definitely was this thing that happened some point in the 2000s when there was this resurgence of it. And yeah, so I know what you're saying. I was just saying that identity of of being linked with that goth subculture
was right away. Like, that's all I was saying. It was like we were, I mean, I'm not saying I wasn't goth, that's to be determined, but that's for people to find out on their own. But I definitely hung out with a lot of goth people, and that was, we loved it. And we, not to go off on Nightmare for Christmas, Burger King actually had these watches.
I remember those. I got one of those for Christmas.
Oh, that's awesome. We were all into collecting all these watches. They were so cheap. I think they were like $2 or something. And we would just buy them. Like, we had so many of them. And the battery life on those were like so bad. And I think I found one maybe like 5 or 6 years after the fact, and then it battery worked and everything, and then it worked for like 2 months, and then it died, you know, and then it was all like that.
Now, I feel like I need to kind of correct and qualify my statement a little bit then, because it's not so much that I have a problem with, like, you know, like any kind of particular subculture identifying with Nightmare Before Christmas. I think my beef, at least when I was younger, was that this was something that I was really into from the start. And it was something I appreciated when it was kind of still relatively, you know, it wasn't so mainstream. And I guess what irritated me is that it going mainstream and then all these people who just literally discovered it like 5 minutes ago going like, oh my gosh, you don't understand how much
I connect, right, of course,
which this means to me. And it's like, you know, try, you know, I've been into this for years and you just saw like a cool looking t-shirt at your local store, and now you wanted to say you're on the same level as me. Unfortunately, I could be like, kind of like a snob like that sometimes.
Oh, that's who you are from the Friendly Neighborhood Fanboys. So,
yeah, well, it was from the Friendly Neighborhood Fanboys, but yeah, it's one of those, like, you know, kind of geek genes I possess that I'm not very proud of, but
it's all
it
good.
Just kind of like flares up every once in a while, and you kind of try to push it back down. It's, you know, you kind of become self-aware.
It's all good. I just wanted to bring that up because that's something I think about. I definitely recognize the when that resurgence came. It was pretty interesting, yeah, because it wasn't really beloved by most when it was released at all. But anyways, this is not the Nightmare Before Christmas podcast, so let's or episode as it were. So any other Disneyland things for you?
You know, okay, so I kind of had this like stray observation, and maybe it was just me, but I did get one of the rides I did make sure to go on multiple times is the Indiana Jones ride, because you know, I think it's, you know, one of the finest attractions there is. I think it's just really well done. And it's funny because like my reaction going on it after not having gone on it for a couple years is, it kind of feels like, because, you know, basically you're kind of caught in this temple and this angry god is, or idol or whatever is trying to, like, kill you. And it kind of feels like they kind of played their biggest card first. Because, like, the first thing that happens to you is, you know, you enter the temple and then you take a left and you enter, like, this basically, like, tomb of, like, the angry, screaming dead who are coming for you. Mm-hmm. And after going on the ride, I couldn't help be left with, like, they kind of played their biggest card right at the beginning. Like, this angry god kind of played their biggest card against you at the beginning. Because it's like, if you just went through a room full of like screaming undead trying to go for you, like, what do I care about bugs or snakes or anything else you've got? Because that was like, that was really your ace right there. And you drop that right at the beginning of the round.
Are you referring to the part of the ride where you enter this huge open space and all this stuff's going on around you? Is that part that you're talking about?
Well, there's
about?
A part where it's like it's got kind of all these skeletons, and then all of a sudden, like, as you get partway through the room, like, you start hearing the screaming and these skeletons like literally pop up. And it's, you know, they're supposed to be like these, like, it's supposed to be like this undead, as if they're kind of trying to come out at you.
Oh, okay.
And so it's like, that's really like, you're escalating it right there. You went from like the angry undead, and then next you put me in a room that's like basically blank and then there's bugs. And you think that somehow that's supposed to top what you've just put me through. Anyways, I don't know. I just kind of felt like maybe their level of threats against you were kind of prioritized wrong. I don't know.
I can't even talk. I haven't been on this ride in a long time, so I don't really recall the sequence of events. But I just know that when the first time I went on that ride and you go enter that huge room I'm referring to,
Mm-hmm.
That to me is the climax of the ride, where you're just like, I am totally in the middle of this. Like, it is so huge and there's so much stuff going on. And it's all practical effects.
Oh, you're just thinking of like the entrance of the temple where you see like the giant idol face and there's like flames and stuff going everywhere.
Yeah.
Probably in the background you see another Jeep going by, and yeah, that's pretty impressive too. You're right. I mean, it's kind of like that is kind of the big climax right there, but they give you that first, and then
yeah, this is pretty early on the ride, and for me that works. That everything is smaller after that because it actually makes you kind of think that right on the other side of this wall, there's all this stuff going on.
Right,
at least that's the way that I interpreted it. But that's my vague memory of going on it, which was a very long time ago. So maybe we can have this debate after I write it again.
Yeah, maybe you need to go on it, and then we can talk about whether like the Screaming Dead was like played too soon or not.
All right, it's a date. Okay. We will revisit the Screaming Dead topic.
But yeah, that was basically it. I went to Cars Land; that was absolutely amazing. I went to Trader Sam's for the first time ever; that was fantastic. Spent way too much money on collectible mugs there.
Well, you know, collectible mugs are one of those things that the kind of a luxury tax there.
Right.
You know, you're going to be spending more than you would want for a mug. But you get doesn't cool things happen when you get certain mugs?
Yeah, like there was like the first one I got was like a shipwreck, and like when you get the shipwreck, like they ring a bell and there's like this, you know, ship in a bottle, and like they have all these storm effects and it starts like bobbing around and stuff. It's fun.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. You should that's kind of like Adam's inside tourist tip, is that there's no better way to take a break in the middle of the day than to go get a drink or two at Trader Sam's. So
alrighty, I will tell you that if as I mentioned on some of my other reports, any alcohol intake I do is at the end of the day, because I go pretty hard and alcohol will slow me down. So that wouldn't work for me, but if some people can really keep going when they're got a buzz on, so you know, more power to them. Hit up Trader Sam's while you're doing your thing. Well, hopefully I won't go as crazy as I was on my last Walt Disney World trip, as far as like just hours on my feet. And you know, Disneyland is obviously a lot smaller, so that's less walking.
Yeah, that was very noticeable when I was there, that it is like a lot more maneuverable. And it was even interesting because something that I was surprised by is that the last, you know, like the last kind of walkable multi-park situation I've been to was, of course, Universal and Islands of Adventure, and it's like a huge walk from park to park. And so I was like kind of in awe when I actually got to Disneyland, exactly how short the walk, you know, I'd been there before, but like how short the walk is between like California Adventure and Disneyland. I mean, it's just like, you know, like 5 minutes you're there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, because even at Universal, it is a little bit of a hike. It's not too bad, but it is between the two parks. So, looking forward to that. But let's move on to Halloween Horror Nights. Obviously, that could do a whole podcast on that. But the Halloween Horror Nights in Universal Hollywood. What are some of your thoughts? Did you listen yet to my review? All right. So I'm sure you just know about it from being a theme park fan. I act like I'm the only one you know about stuff. So
yeah, I went to Orlando's HHN last year, so I'm familiar with
that. Oh, you're familiar with that? You're familiar with what's going on there? How would you compare what you've heard about Orlando's this year's to Hollywood's?
I would argue there's definitely a budgetary difference. It felt like, in general, probably the scale of a lot of their attractions are smaller. Not necessarily worse, but definitely smaller. Biggest thing comparably between the two for me is that I don't know when the last time you've been to like Universal Hollywood, and it was
a very long time ago.
Yeah, it was a kid for me, and it didn't strike me then, but definitely strikes me now that Universal Hollywood is like the most awkward theme park ever. Because first of all, you have like the upper lot. The upper lot's a pretty small area, and it's really kind of inconvenient now because like half of it's closed for construction because they're building Wizarding World with Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. So most of that's closed, and then it's weird because you've got like an upper lot, and then you've got the lower lot. The lower lot is like it's ridiculous to get there because it's like you have to go down like these three or four huge escalators. I mean, it's like literally a 15-20 minute journey to get from like point A to point B just to be able to go on anything on the lower lot. And then because they didn't have the space that Universal Orlando does to be able to get to the bulk of the houses, you then have to go like it must have been like half a mile or more. You had to go on this big long walk out into the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
To be able to get to like the four prime houses. And then they try to make it more entertaining. They add like a little turn. Like, I don't know how much do you watch Walking Dead at all?
I do.
Yeah, so that there's like a little terminus cave you have to go through and stuff, but largely it's just kind of awkwardly kind of walking kind of in the middle of nowhere. You have to go up a hill, down a hill, and then you have to do this all over again in order to get back. They could have, you know, might have served them better just to have like a shuttle or a tram or something like that, but it just makes like the whole experience really disjointed because it's like a lot of work to get from the first lot to the second lot, and then it's like a lot of work to get to the back lot where they've got majority of the houses. And so it kind of feels like at that point when you're done with it, when you're leaving a section, you have to really make sure you're done.
Oh yeah, yeah, you can't just wander around.
it's like once I leave, I'm not going back. I'm not gonna put that effort again. That being said, the houses were really good. Probably my favorite was obviously Aliens versus Predator. It was fantastic. It was different than the one you guys had, because my understanding of the one up in Orlando was purely on a spaceship, if my understanding is correctly.
Mm-hmm.
This one kind of had like this kind of theming where you started by entering like a crashed spaceship, and then you eventually emerge from the spaceship as if it crash landed in some kind of like countryside, and then you kind of go through like a house and stuff. And oh, so wow. When you're on the ship, naturally you're running into like aliens and predators. They have these really excellent hallways that are just kind of like, I kind of called them like hell no hallways, where it's like super like narrow. And then basically you'd be walking down this hallway, minding your own business. And then to the left of you, all of a sudden like a predator would jump out. And there's this predator grabbing for you in your face. And so you like instantly jerk to the other side of the hallway. But then like an alien would pop out at the other side and they'd both be coming in for you at the same time.
Oh, wow. That definitely was not in Orlando. They were... When I listen to other people's review, apparently there was some point where they were together, but I don't really remember it. So they obviously weren't really that close together at all.
Yeah, there was multiple choke points where they basically put you in a very small hallway with both of them coming out at you. And it was like, you know, kind of terrifying.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So there's that. There was also an addition of a lot of, they had like a lot of just like civilians running around with like face huggers on them. That was kind of cool.
Hmm. I don't think they had that at all on the other one. It's interesting how these houses came out the same year, and it was like a little bit of a different approach to it.
And then, like, the piece de la resistance is like kind of at the very end, like the grand finale, is you kind of go, you're kind of walking through this house, and you get to like the living room. And basically, up on like the living room is kind of a little bit high ceilinged, and up on the ceiling is like a full sized animatronic queen alien.
Oh, wow.
Just like sitting there, like shaking its head and like hissing at you, and you had to walk to like kind of directly underneath it to get out.
Oh wow.
So that was really cool. So that was easily the highlight of the night. So that was really good. Walking Dead was fine. I know that some people kind of complained it was short in comparison to the one at Orlando, and I'm sure it was, but it still felt like it was a pretty good size. It was still a pretty good size. I guess, kind of a little bit over the whole Walking Dead thing. I mean, I love the TV show, but, you know, I think really Universal could probably take a break from it, which I think they are. I think they've actually said they're taking a break after this year. But we'll see, because the popularity seems to be pretty high on it, obviously.
I find it interesting. I didn't get to go to the Walking Dead house when I went, because I wasn't going to wait in a 90-minute to 2-hour line. But I kind of feel like, I'm just not sick of it. I haven't experienced it. I'm not sick of it being a part of it, because I feel like it's a marquee brand that is bringing in a lot of people. And obviously the more people they go, the more money they have, the bigger the budgets they go. Like, there always has to be this kind of thing. So, but I mean, I'm personally not sick of it, 'cause I never experienced it. But also feel like being a fan of the television show, like the show itself has great gore for being a horror fan, but to me it's a drama. It doesn't really play like a horror you know, movie or show. You know, it's not really about, you know, the walkers.
Well, I think it's because, like, for me personally, and I'm sure there's probably room for debate about this, I think that usually the truly great zombie pieces usually delve into the fact that really zombies aren't the greatest threat that, you know, survivors are. You know, our own,
right,
our own messed up kind of human drama is, like, the greatest threat. And I think, you know, like, I think when you look at some of the greatest pieces of zombie work, they usually hone in on that. I mean, certainly, like, that, you know, Walking Dead does, you know, Dawn of the Dead certainly did.
Yeah, I think all Romero's films were social comedy.
Right. So, and so now to qualify too, also, if it had been just like there was like a Walking Dead house, it probably would have been fine, but it was just, there was so much Walking Dead at this event. There was a Walking Dead house, there was an entire Walking Dead scare zone that was separate from the house.
Oh, I didn't know there was a Walking Dead scare zone.
Oh yeah, there was a Walking Dead scare zone as you got into the back lot, which is actually pretty cool. It was like, it was kind of like this kind of weird apocalyptic kind of city type of thing with a bunch of like shipping crates and like broken down cars and stuff and zombies coming at you at all angles. So those two, and there was also like the Terror Tram, which takes you behind the scenes, and that was also themed to, you guess it, Walking Dead.
I
so
gotcha,
it's literally
gotcha,
like three Walking Dead things in this one. And it's because you're right, people are going nuts for it. It's what's selling, and it may be kind of sad because originally I was kind of standing in line waiting to get to the park, and they got somebody out on like a microphone to kind of try to hype everybody up, and they decided to do a poll of the audience to see what the audience was there for. And of course they said Walking Dead, and like, you know, the entire audience just went nuts. And then they said, like, you know, Alien versus Predator, and it was like almost completely quiet. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like the fact that they're doing an Alien versus Predator house, honestly, is like a whole lot more impressive than the fact that they managed to do a Walking Dead house.
Well, there you go. You could, you know, wave your geek flag there and be like, I'm here for the cool thing that nobody likes.
American Werewolf in London was really cool. I went to the one last year over at Orlando, and they were definitely different. Mm-hmm. There were some cool choices made in the Hollywood one that differed from the Orlando one. Probably the biggest thing is probably the actual werewolves were better in Orlando. That was probably the largest thing I took away from it, but the one in Hollywood was still incredibly enjoyable. I think by and far the strangest haunted house they had was like they had the, you know, you had the face off scare zone in you had the face off scare zone in Orlando. Did you get a chance to go check that out?
Oh yes, yes. That I had some pictures there and I had a good time there. I'm not familiar with the characters because I only watched the show once, but
yeah, I've watched it infrequently, so like I can't say that I recognize any of the characters, but you know, I appreciate the show. I think the show's cool. But then we, like, over in LA, they actually had a face-off maze called Face Off in the Flesh.
Oh, it was a maze.
Yes, it was an actual maze, and it was interesting for two reasons. First of all, I don't know how much you know about the current layout of Universal Studios, but Universal Studios has kind of like it's closing down after Halloween Horror Nights, but they actually had for a very long time a year-round haunt.
Yeah, the House of Horrors, where the classic monsters and I believe Chucky and Freddy were in there.
It's gone through like a lot of revisions, because I know at one point it was a mummy house, and then it was like, I think, a Van Helsing house, and I think, yeah, the last incarnation of it's just been like a House of Horrors. So first of all, it's interesting because the maze itself already exists. It's already like a pre-existing structure. Mm-hmm. Obviously you can't really change it. It is what it is.
Right.
And that's totally fine, because you know arguably it has probably among the best scenic work of the houses, because it's they're using like a year-round attraction for its base. But like the weird thing, I think they did this last year too, and it just like struck me as such kind of an odd choice, is that the other theme throughout the house seems to be dubstep.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, I've been heard about that. It's like a DJ remix or something.
Yeah, it's like you're like walking through like the mummy's tomb, and there's like, you know, like bug creatures jumping at you, and then all of a sudden it's like, wah, 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 wah. And so it's just like this very kind of, it's almost kind of very effective in the fact that it's giving you like three very different things. You've got like face-off creatures, the set of the House of Horrors and dubstep, and it's very disjointed, and so it's probably kind of alarming for that because you're just not sure what the heck is going on there.
Right.
At one point, you're through like you actually go through like a God's honest like creepy Alice in Wonderland dance party.
as lame as this might be perceived by some people, it sounds really awesome to me. So I don't know what you thought about it, but
I wouldn't say lame. I appreciate it because it was just very weird, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just kind of like this is kind of a really weird set of choices they've made here, and I had fun. I think that's probably the right words. I had a lot of fun in that maze because it was just kind of so odd. And there was a clown 3D maze that had music by Slash that was kind of interesting. It felt like a lot of the mazes used the same scare technique. It felt like there was a whole lot of, I don't know if this was like the same for you for like the houses you went to, but this year it felt like there was a lot of like going down a hallway and all of a sudden like a light and a sound would blare and something would jump out at you from behind a curtain. That seemed to be kind of like their go-to scare over at Hollywood.
Not particularly. I don't recall any particular thing happening like a repetition, as it were. I just thought there was a lot of misdirection, and mm-hmm. and also because I was always looking ahead to see what was happening, I thought that I would be prepared for that, be prepared for when they come out, but.
Right.
But they never came out at that same spot. They came out somewhere else by the time I got there. So it
okay.
didn't feel like repetitive at all to me. That doesn't mean that it wasn't, but it just didn't feel like it.
And the Dusk Till Dawn one was really cool. The story I've heard is it's like a lot more intense over at Hollywood, but it's like in Hollywood. It's weird because in Hollywood they're allowed to get away with more, it sounds like, especially with like kind of like, scantily clad women and violence, but it's also really weird because but on the flip side there's absolutely no booze to be found at the Hollywood one, and so it's kind of weird how in some ways they lay it on more, in some ways they don't.
That's weird because this is like the biggest thing going on at Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando is how much alcohol they sell. I think I heard something that's where they make like most of their money from the whole event. So that's funny that they don't have it at all in Hollywood.
That was like one of the biggest culture shocks of going to like Universal Orlando for like the first time. It's just like exactly how, in comparison to Disney, how booze friendly like Universal is. Like, I remember like when I was walking through like the queue for Forbidden Journey, they on busy days would actually have like a beer vendor in line so you could like grab yourself
really
like, they literally have carts so you could like grab a cold one while you're waiting to go on the ride, and it just seems to be very much kind of in like they're very very friendly towards that at Orlando. But I did not see any alcohol at Hollywood, which is probably okay because it's already kind of a rowdy event. Maybe trying to introduce intoxicants to the whole mix is not the best thing to do, and I think that's probably why they don't do it at Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. But the Dusk Till Dawn house was really cool. It was kind of cool because there was like this little extra bit of interactivity if you're a Twitter follower, because they give you like a passcode if you're following Twitter every night that you can use at the beginning of the maze. And it's cool because when you walk up to the maze, like the actual Gecko Brothers are just kind of outside.
That's cool.
Just kind of interacting with you. And if you go up to... Tarantino's character.
I don't remember his character's name, but yeah.
Okay, but anyways, Tarantino's character, not played by Tarantino on the TV show, but if you go up and say like the passcode, it'll like show you this like he shows you what he's got in this little notebook, and he's got like some picture of some kind of demon snake, and he starts interrogating you on whether you've seen it or not.
Oh wow.
And then there's some like Russell Brand looking guy who's like the bouncer at the door, and if you give him the passcode, he gives you I've got it here in front of me, it's this card that looks like it's a card for like a call girl. And it's got her like a phone number on it, and you can call the phone number, and there's like a message recorded that you can talk to. And it seems to be leading you into some kind of like alt reality game you could do via the web.
Oh, that's awesome! That definitely was absent from the Orlando version.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice touch. Like, that's kind of cool because this kind of gives you a reason to kind of follow them on Twitter, and it's just like like a little extra level of interactivity to the whole thing. So that was really good. Dracula Untold was fine. I don't know. It was a Dracula maze. It was good. Just don't have like a strong opinion one way or the other about it.
Okay. I didn't go to that one, so I don't know.
Another thing that I thought was kind of hilariously odd is there was – they do a thing over at Universal Hollywood called Jurassic Park in the Dark.
Okay.
And it's basically kind of like a lights off for the most part ride of Jurassic Park, except I think they had most of their show lights on, so I think maybe it's just dark outside. I don't know. I don't know exactly what they were doing. And they've been like more experimental with it in the past. Like I remember seeing that one year when like I think Freddy Krueger is one of the icons. They actually put Freddy Krueger on the Jurassic Park ride. So it'd be like Velociraptor, Velociraptor, Freddy Krueger, Velociraptor.
That's so ridiculous. Wow, I never knew that. That is ridiculous.
So anyways, now they just have this thing called like Jurassic Park in the Dark, which was equally hilarious because it's like basically kind of dark outside. But I'm sure you're well familiar with the Jurassic Park ride at this point.
Right, yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so like you're basically out there and you go through like the initial part in the dark when you're outside. And then it's funny because then you go into like the actual show building and then like... And then you start going up like the lift hill, like because the interesting thing is once you get in that show building, a good portion of the ride is just simply like show stuff along a lift hill to get you to the top so it can drop you. Mm-hmm. But like all of a sudden, like you're going up the lift hill, then out of nowhere, like they start piping in like the refrain to "Welcome to the Jungle."
Wow.
And it kind of took, the ride wasn't like in the least bit frightening anymore. It was just kind of really weird because it was like there's velociraptors and Welcome to the Jungle is playing, and then there's the T-Rex, and then you're falling.
That's wacky.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I just feel like I'm like, this is like a really odd choice. Why did you guys decide to do this? I kind of enjoy it because I can like say that I experienced that, but I still don't quite know what you're going for here.
That's interesting. I got to tell you one thing. This is, I haven't heard any podcast do any coverage on Jurassic Park in the Dark. So you want the real stuff, you come to Creepy Kingdom.
Yeah, I'm digging into the stuff that really matters here. They're kind of half-butted Halloween version of like Jurassic Park that I'm sure some like stoned Universal executive came up with in like 5 minutes.
Right. We turn the lights off, right?
And then we're like, play Welcome to the Jungle because, you know, really when you think about it, it's kind of like a jungle with dinosaurs. It's...
And the, actually, another thing, the beginning of the ride is not scary because even the dinosaurs are the gentle dinosaurs.
Right, exactly.
So you're in the dark with the gentle dinosaurs, and then when the ones are trying to kill you, they're mostly in the indoor section. So.
And like they're too busy rocking out to come after you. So.
That's hilarious.
And it's funny because like they don't start at the beginning of the song. It's just like very kind of like very abrupt. That just all of a sudden it comes into like like the part where he's like screaming and it gets right into like the kind of the big part of Welcome to the Jungle. So it just kind of jumps right in and you're just like, what is going on here?
Wow, I guess that's the Celebrate Slash, you know, contributing to the event.
On a plus note, their T-Rex actually worked. Which last time I went to Universal Orlando and went on it, their T-Rex did not. It was a disco T-Rex.
Oh, wow. One thing I have to say, I just recently went on the Jurassic Park ride for the first time on my last trip to Universal. It wasn't open when I went before. And I found out of any attraction that I did the entire trip, it was the only one that physically hurt me. Because I don't know when you go down the big hill or whatever, the way that they stop you in the Orlando one is they really make you kind of slam to a complete stop.
Really? I hadn't noticed that.
You go down the hill and you slam and you're pushed forward. Like, and actually all these signs that say, don't try to not go forward or whatever. I don't know. It pretty much gave me like real minor whiplash. And my spine hurt, and I was, like, in pain for, like, 20 minutes. And I was like, no, did that ride kind of suck? It hurt me physically. So, I don't know, I'm just kind of curious on if you had the same experience riding it.
No, you know, the weird thing is I did not have that experience. You know, okay, backtracking for a second, the ride that did hurt me, though, was the Matterhorn. It's, like, frightening over at Disney.
Oh, that's all I keep hearing is that it's so painful and horrible.
Yeah, I was like rattling around in that thing. It was just, yeah, I was like, absolutely terrified because I was like levitating off the ground as this thing was moving around. But anyways, yeah, so that was Jurassic Park in the Dark. And I guess really the only other real thing, well, actually quite a big thing I'm about to talk about, is the Terror Tram.
Yes.
Terror Tram is awesome, if for nothing else, because you actually get to get off the tram and go wander around all the back sets that you remember seeing as a kid when you were going on the tour. You like, they basically they take you back to the back lot and they kind of let you go, and you get a start, I think, out in like the Seussville, and at one point you do get to go through the War of the Worlds set, which is neat. And then the big ones is you get to walk by the Bates Motel. And
wait, this is War of the Worlds, the Tom Cruise movie, not
right. Yeah, the Tom Cruise movie.
Right, just to be clear, that's cool because there's really amazing imagery in that film. So yeah,
It's like the crash airplane and stuff is is what's back there. But I think probably the coolest thing, especially for anybody who's a horror movie fan, is that you get to walk by the set of the Bates Motel and then actually go up to the Bates house. And they have like a special nighttime photo op where you can go onto the porch of the Bates house and actually get your picture taken with a Norman Bates lookalike.
That's all. So just to be clear again, this is from the original Psycho film, not the Bates Motel television show.
Yeah, there's not like kind of a pudgy-ish 6'4" Norman Bates as much. I'm sorry. That was actually in reference to probably Gus Van Sant's.
Oh, that's what you're thinking about. Yeah, yeah. No, there's a show on. I know that the original Psycho House was always part of the tour. I just want to make sure that that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, the original one. I haven't actually seen the TV show. I've heard it's good, supposedly.
I don't know. Yeah, no judgment on the show. I just wanted to make sure that you actually got to go to the original Psycho House.
Yeah, original Psycho House that you see on the tour. And that was cool because I think that's kind of like a neat thing that you can only do when you go to Halloween Horror Nights.
Cool.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So, Halloween Horror Nights, Universal Hollywood. How would you compare it to your experience at Orlando last year? Just kind of as opposed to how you compared to what you've heard about Orlando this year. How do you compare just physically being at the two different events?
I give it to Orlando. I had a great time at Hollywood Horror Nights. I would definitely go again. Big thing though is I think Orlando's park layout's just like a lot better. It's easier to navigate, and like I said, generally speaking, it feels like there's just a lot more room to put on houses in Universal Orlando. So I think as a result, they've got larger, better fleshed out houses, and I think it would seem that they have a better budget.
Yeah, well, they are building the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal Hollywood. So
that's true.
It is a transitional phase, and I have no problem with them building that there because I love it.
And HHN Hollywood's lacking any kind of show, which is kind of a big absence.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because they don't have Bill and Ted anymore because last year they got into some trouble.
Yeah, and when we get to it, Not Scary Farm really, really hammers in on that.
Well, let's get to it.
So Not Scary Farm I also went to. That was really cool. I guess, first of all, in comparison, I think, it's cool because it's all original IPs, so not a bunch of movie stuff. It felt like a little over-reliant on masks, but there were a lot of really cool scenic stuff and animatronics being used.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool. I started out with their buffet, which is like kind of like a chance for you to get in early, go get some dinner. It's kind of fun because while you're eating, they've got like monsters roaming around, kind of playing the crowd and stuff, and that's cool. And I did this really cool thing where they actually offer this thing called a skeleton key, which I don't know if you've read anything about these.
Yeah, it's a upcharge where you get a special experience in the houses.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool because, like, this year it actually came with, you got, like, a nice little laminated pass showing, like, all that you've got the front-of-the-line entry to all these mazes. And you get this actually really cool, like, big, ornate-looking skeleton key that you actually get to carry around with you. And that's what gets you into all the skeleton rooms.
Just walking around like, look at me. I'm VIP.
I will definitely recommend, I cannot recommend heavily enough that if you're going to go to one of these like amusement park haunts and you're only going to go for one night, spend the extra money, get the front of the line pass if you can at all afford it. Because if you're going to want to do one of these in one night, I think it's the only way to do it.
So when you have this VIP Skeleton Key, is that a front of line pass or is
it's an unlimited front of the line pass.
Oh, okay, cool. It's not just for the extra experiences. Okay.
It's got the extra experiences and the front of the line.
Oh, okay. Not cool. Not bad. Not bad.
And the extra experiences are really cool. Like they are like kind of for the most part really super interactive. For example, like the first one I did was there's a house called Black Magic, which is basically follows basically a seance gone wrong in which some people tried to contact Harry Houdini and kind of unleash his vengeful spirit. And the skeleton room, the skeleton key room is really cool. They only let in about like five people at a time. And you come in and there's like a psychic medium. And she has you all sit down at a table and take hands so that you guys can do a seance to try to contact Harry Houdini. And the seance quickly goes wrong. And like the table starts like levitating and shaking.
Oh, wow.
And you're confronted by the angry spirit of Harry Houdini, who eventually like manifests over and like kills like the medium. And then you're sent into the maze after that.
That's cool.
And then the maze itself was really cool. It was like kind of a amusement park. It was kind of a magic show themed maze, including like a giant animatronic devil bunny that tries to attack you at the end. I probably will cut this one short and probably just give you kind of the one or two of the highlights.
Let's highlight instead of going through all the houses here, because since they're not IPs,
right? It's like kind of like that's great. I could tell you about them, right, but you know, right. You have no frame of reference. By far, I think probably the coolest house of the coolest house was Voodoo.
Okay.
And Voodoo is really cool. It's one of the houses that actually has a skeleton key room, and basically in the skeleton key room that you find out that like some kind of demon is trying to get all of your souls, and like the only way to try to fight back is you're like forced into these coffins. You have to like sit in these coffins while this ritual takes place, and like the coffins shake and you hear like this demonic voice talking to you, and you're each in a coffin by yourself, so you're just kind of sitting there in the dark.
Wow, interesting.
And then eventually the backs of the coffins actually open up, and so you exit out a secret exit into the maze. And Voodoo is basically a house that starts in kind of like a old like Louisiana manor, and then eventually makes its way out to the swamps. And what's really cool about Voodoo that I think is something that could potentially become huge later as people like kind of continue to experiment on this is that Voodoo has multiple paths. So you don't take one path through the house. You can be diverted different ways depending on what's going on. And so the first time you go, like you may very well have a different experience every time you go through.
Oh wow, that's awesome!
Yeah,
because that's one thing. And once you go to the house once, you're like, oh, that's cool, I got it. But the fact that there's different things, really, I guess that's why they have passes. I always see that when I look at Not Scary Farm stuff, they have a pass where you can go, you know, pay to go for the whole time it's open. And I guess that's one of the reasons why, because you're gonna have multiple experiences.
I felt it was like a little bit short. That's my only real critique of it, is it was really short. But I think that Not Scary Farm is really onto something with that concept of a multiple path maze, and that I think it's something we'll probably see again, and I think it could be, you know, it's going to lead to something incredible down the road.
Very cool.
And then basically the other thing that was huge this year is they had this new thing, I don't know if you read about it, called Special Ops Infected.
Yeah, it's like a laser tag zombie type thing.
Yeah, basically, like, it's crazy, first of all, how popular it is, because, like, the only way you can get to go, for the most part, is you have to go, like, first thing and go get, like, a ticket, like, kind of a fast pass to come back later in the evening. And it's my understanding that basically they go, like, right away. If you don't make a priority to get your ticket for that, you probably won't get a go, period.
Wow.
I showed up, like, you know, I had early entry and I showed up first thing and I still got like a comeback time of like 4 hours later.
So that must be one of the main reason people are going to this thing.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like very, it's in its fledgling stages. I think that it left me with some questions, but once again, it kind of feels like something that if they continue to work it and they keep on trying to improve upon it, I think it's going to become something incredibly special. And basically what it is that you arrive at this kind of military base and you're split up into squadrons and you go on like these kind of like these kind of cool little interactive missions, like where we had to go off and try to find this scientist who might have the cure to like the zombie epidemic. And of course, while we're doing so, we're being assaulted at all times by like zombies. And of course, stuff comes up, like, you know, like you show up and like the scientist isn't there or something like that. And then you have to go do another thing. And it's really cool. And yeah, you have the guns, and the guns, you shoot the guns at the zombies. And the only thing I was kind of unclear on is exactly how they were scoring it, because it felt like there were some zombies that seemed to have some kind of like laser collar type of thing that probably interacts with like the actual gun. But a lot of the times it just felt like we were just kind of blankly firing at the head of just like roaming scare actors.
What happens when you hit them?
They usually jerk back or fall down dead.
And that's it? Yep. Zombies are really dead? Yep. You don't even know that they're undead?
You have to get headshots.
Okay.
But yeah, so it was definitely fun. It was definitely kind of, and it was even cool within like the squadron we've been, we're eventually split up and we started doing like separate coinciding missions. Like, you know, we had to go to this one place, but then we ran into a mob that was trying to stop us, and so half the squad had to lay down cover fire so the rest of us could get to this location.
Oh, so you actually are competing against other people while you're in the
there is a ranking system. Yeah, I mean like you aren't competing against other people, but I mean you are scored against other people.
Okay.
But it was just that there was a bunch of actors playing like an angry like rebel mob that doesn't want you to.
Oh, they were actors. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Okay, so it was part of the show.
So, yeah, so part of the show, but like still we got split off where like half of the group had to like lay cover fire so the other half could get to where we were going.
That's fun. So it's like you're really in a war there.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. It is like a really good idea, and I think as they continue to kind of figure it out, I think it's going to be something that's going to. It's going to be a perennial favorite at Not Scary Farm, I have the feeling. I think they probably the biggest question they need to get answers. They need to figure out how to make it manageable for the crowds, because I think that's the biggest hurdle to get over to make it truly successful, is to make it as a thing that can handle the volumes of crowds they get, because I think it's going to be a problem if it continues to be this thing that you can only go to if you happen to have been lucky enough to get a ticket right when you enter the park. Especially when you're advertising that as one of your like marquee attractions you have at the park, I can imagine it'd be incredibly frustrating if you're somebody who didn't know better to be told like, well, okay, you were told that you get to do this thing, but actually you can't do this thing because it's sold out.
Right, you would think you just go there and you may eventually be able to do it. So I guess they have to increase capacity for it next year if they're going to continue with it.
Right, I guess they did have a standby line, but it was like a very vague standby line. Like, well, you could be waiting hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So, definitely really cool. If anybody happens to be going, well, they're not going to hear this. It's going to be closed. So,
yeah.
Check it out if you come next year. I'm sure I'll be back.
Yeah, the only thing I've noticed about Not Scary Farm is that they do bring back a lot of things. It's not just
seems like they basically have a couple of new haunts every year, and then they kind of do an upgrade of all the other pre-existing ones, is my understanding.
Which, as someone that doesn't get to go, that I don't have a problem with that. But I guess if I live locally, I might feel differently. Or maybe it's fun to go back and see the old favorites. I'm not sure.
Mm.
Obviously, it's not still even coming down. You're saying it's really crowded there, so you know it's obviously working for them doing stuff like doing it that way.
Right.
All right. Cool. So there were some shows there that I heard a whole bunch about.
Yes, there were two shows at Knott's Scary Farm, one of which was The Hanging. And The Hanging is basically Knott's equivalent of the Bill and Ted show. Go ahead.
I was going to say, explain that in case people don't know what the Bill and Ted show is.
Well, okay, so Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando and Halloween Horror Nights in Hollywood up until recently had a show called Bill and Ted's Excellent Halloween Adventure, where basically featured, of course, the characters from the movie Bill and Ted. Bill and Ted Come, and it's basically more or less a year in review in which they lampoon all of like the pop culture and news happenings over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, it was discontinued in Hollywood after last year they received some complaints about inappropriate material. The Hanging is very similar. It doesn't feature like an IP character, but it's basically about, you know, it's a show in which the sheriff, assisted by a sidekick who's like the hangman, basically go in search of like the most despicable celebrity / public figure of the year to hang an effigy, essentially.
Okay.
The show was definitely focused this year on, was definitely poking a lot of fun at Disney. It starts off with this whole Frozen montage of songs.
Okay.
And this big thing, though, was commenting on the fact that Bill and Ted got taken away from Halloween Horror Nights in Hollywood. Like, the basic loose plot of this year is that they're trying to do their normal hanging, but this basic knockoff Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. group comes in and says that they're there to like keep the audience from being offended by anything, so they have to shut down the hanging. With the assistance of a bunch of B-level superheroes, like Wolverine's cousin, the Honey Badger, and Captain Canada, who turned out to be just Rob Ford.
Okay, Captain.
Who's absolutely hilarious? The guy that got to play Rob Ford was just like running around. Drunk.
Who's Rob Ford?
He was like the mayor of Canada,
Mayor of Canada.
Toronto, mayor of Toronto, who recently came under a lot of controversy.
Oh, okay.
Because he got caught doing crack in office.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I didn't remember his name, but yeah, I got you.
So, anyways, it was like a lot of fun. Very crude. Lots of blood. Like, there's a whole lot of blood effect. Like, every other second, somebody's punching somebody and squirting blood all over the place. And
that sounds a lot more gory than Bill and Ted.
It is. It definitely is a lot more gory than Bill and Ted. That's something they definitely kind of ramp up to 10 or 11. And by the end, they wound up hanging Justin Bieber and the owner of the LA Clippers in effigy. It was good.
Wow. Did I ever get any backlash for killing public figures at a theme park?
If they're not liked public figures, nobody cares.
I get. I mean, the people would care. That's what I meant.
I don't know. We could go off on a tangent on whether or not Bill and Ted should have been canceled and relative whether people are too sensitive about that kind of thing. But that's probably for another day.
Sure.
The other show, of course, was Elvira's Big Top, you know, pun intended.
Of course.
And that one was fantastic. I mean, Elvira looks great. I mean, obviously, she's in her 60s, doesn't look it. And she was at her campy best, of course. She's basically hosting more or less, she's hosting basically a circus show. You know, she kind of comes out and she actually raps at the beginning.
That's amazing. I think I heard someone mention that in a negative connotation on some podcast I listened to. I'm not being vague on purpose. I really don't remember, but and I was just like, that would be the thing that pushed it over awesomeness for me.
But yeah, she was rapping to. I think like she came out and she did a parody of Iggy Azalea's "Fancy."
Oh my god, that's so awesome.
I was impressed. At first, I thought it might have been recorded, but then I realized, like, no, this is actually Elvira doing this. This is kind of awesome. Right on.
That is incredible. Just also full disclosure before we even continue to the listeners and for you, just so everyone know, I'm a huge Elvira fan, and right now I'm staring, which is directly behind my desk, a huge poster that was an advertisement for Elvira's short-lived beer, Elvira's Night Brew. So I'm very... I love all things Elvira. So.
Well, then as a side note, something you probably want to check out immediately then is that she had mentioned, and we actually heard during the pre-show, that apparently she's just released a musical single called Elvira's Big Round Pumpkins.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I guess it was written, I think, by Fred Schneider of the B-52s.
Oh, yeah, I'll check it out for sure.
Yes, they showed the music video. It was very suggestive and absolutely hilarious. So anyway, she's basically hosting this. She's hosting this like circus show. She comes in and comes out, you know, in between segments to kind of banter with the crowd. There was this one point that I'm sure you would have loved where, she basically gets a guy out of the audience and brings him up on stage and says, okay, we're going to play a little game. And she's like, I've got all these cards here, and you're going to roll a dice, and that dice is going to pick the card. And on each of these cards is an activity that we can do together, and we're going to do whatever activities on that card. And okay. So, of course, it's a loaded die. I mean, it was pretty obvious. And right. So it's like the same thing every time. And inevitably, the card turned over that says, it says, you know, hug. And so she winds up hugging whatever the audience volunteer is. But then it's revealed that every other card had grope on it.
So that was it. So that's the joke, is that the person didn't get to grope Elvira, just got a hug.
Yep, pretty much. Awesome. You know, it's just like a lot of like, you know, Elvira is just full of that kind of, she's like kind of shameless about that whole kind of suggestive humor. That's kind of her shtick, and that works. And she's joined by this dance troupe called the Academy of Villains, which I kind of recognize. They've been on some reality like talent competitions and stuff before, but they wound up doing this thing over with Elvira. And then basically she comes out and she presents, there's like, she has a couple of like kind of freak showish acts that come out and perform. One is this really, it was probably my favorite maybe among my favorite things that night, was this guy called Brett Loudermilk, who is a sword swallower, and he came out and did this whole this amazing routine where he's like sword swallowing, but he's like kind of in character the entire time. He's playing like this kind of like this mental patient, and he comes out to this like rockabilly song called like No More Hot Dogs. Which is like kind of punctuated. It's basically this guy singing about how he wants to like kill his girlfriend and put her head on her wall, and he's kind of like doing all the stuff in time to the music, and the chorus is kind of pierced by this maniacal laughter that he stops and does every time that it comes up, and he just does all the sword swallowing stuff, and you know that in of itself is cool, but like the character he had was just so the kind of the whole shtick was so great that it kind of really elevated kind of a neat act to something really special.
That's cool.
And he's obviously really talented. In fact, he's so talented that, funnily enough, you remember how for the Villains event at Hollywood Studios, I think we actually talked about this last time I was on there. Remember how Oogie Boogie had his side show?
Mm-hmm.
That guy was on that show, apparently. Like, basically, they turned
around really?
This guy right after he did that.
Oh, wow. So that was in Orlando. So, yeah.
But what's interesting, apparently Disney would not let him go by his actual real name. They had to, like, they weren't cool with that. They had to give their people, like, a fake name. But, like, Knott's Berry Farm was totally fine with him going under their actual given names.
Oh, that's cool.
But there's a really good video of him on. If you look up, like, Brett Loudermilk and, like, Knott's Scary Farm, you can find, like, a really good video of it on YouTube. It's worth checking out. It's really neat. And then he also had, unfortunately, I don't know her name, but he also brought out a really cool contortionist as well that did, a bunch of really stretchy stuff. And it was really cool. It was a really neat show.
Yeah, that was like the number one reason that I even wanted to go to Knott's Scary Farm. I mean, obviously I didn't get to go, but I mean, this is the second or third year that she's been doing this, and every year I'm like, oh my god, she's not going to do it again. I'm never going to get to see this. But it seems like it's popular enough that is it her third or second year? Do you know?
I know she was there last year. I know that for a fact. I don't know about the year before it.
So we'll see if she comes back next year.
You know, I gotta say, surprisingly, on a whole, I probably liked Knott's Scary Farm better. And the large reason was because it felt like a more complete package.
Better than HHN?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, the houses of HHN probably pound for pound are better. Though I thought there was some very good stuff at Knott's. There was some okay stuff at Knott's. But the fact that they had, like, you know, I'm looking at the list, we had a total of, like, 8 houses, scare zones, and 2 shows at Knott's, as opposed to, you know, just like some houses and some scare zones. It just kind of, for HHN, it just kind of felt like Knott's provided like a much more thorough experience for your dollar.
Yeah, that's kind of, it sounds like Knott's was a little more how Orlando's HHN is.
Right.
And I guess you can blame that mostly on the construction zones, but I think even independent of the construction zones, Universal Hollywood is just laid out differently. So even if they didn't have it, it would, you know, they have that upper and lower lot with the huge escalators. So even independent of that long trek you talked about taking, that's usually not part of the park. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well, and I don't know if it's going to get better, though, when you think about it, because really, like, the big portion of construction going on at Hollywood is that they're putting in Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and even once that's there, you know they're not going to do anything Halloween-related there.
Right, you're right.
Much like they closed Diagon Alley.
Yep.
So it kind of feels like Universal Hollywood just has kind of a really weird park layout that makes them make some really weird decisions on how they're going to, you know, they have to make some really tough choices on how they're going to host that much content.
I have to say, and this is side rant too, and all of this is that, I don't know the official reason why Diagon Alley is not open during Halloween Horror Nights. I assume it was a decision from the Queen, JK, but, I just think it would be so cool to have, like, all these Death Eaters out and just have, you know, and all this chaos going on. Not to the, you know, chainsaw, you know,
right,
extent, but there's definitely some scary, you know, parts of Harry Potter. Obviously, the ride, like Forbidden Journey, is this series of scary things. So, it kind of wish they could have something like that during Halloween Horror Nights.
Yeah, I was thinking about. I thought about the exact same thing. I don't know why they haven't tried harder to capitalize on it, because I think you're right. You could do an absolutely terrifying, you know, Harry Potter zone that wouldn't that would still be in line with like J.K. Rowling's. You know, J.K. Rowling's vision. I mean, you don't have to have, like, a bunch of death and gore and stuff. Like, if you just, you know, filled that thing up with fog and had, like, lots of death theaters, I mean, I'm sure, Orlando, you know, Universal Orlando could probably come up with some really cool practical effect to shoot. That, like, every so often to have, like, you know, the Dark Mark, like, shoot up into the sky.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they could do something really, really cool that would still wouldn't be out of line with like the whole vision of Harry Potter. So hopefully they revisit that in the years to come.
We'll see. I don't know. That's just a side note. But is there anything else about Scary Farm?
Like I said, it was a lot of fun, very interesting. It's just basically what I got. Like I said, I think some of the makeup and stuff wasn't quite as strong. I thought they were over-reliant on masks, which I don't know about you, but for me, it kind of takes me out of it a little bit when I see somebody wearing what ostensibly, you know, works out to be like a, you know, like a, you know, like feels like a $10 store mask.
I don't think I really encountered too many. It depends. I mean, I had to. Nothing really seemed cheap at Hollywood Horror Nights in Orlando. So even when they were masks, it all seemed to kind of work together.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, maybe that was just me. I also don't go to a lot of things like that in general. Like, I don't really go to the local haunts.
Mm-hmm.
So I may not be the best person to say whether that. But to me, overall, I thought Orlando's Hollywood Horror Nights, the production value was just through the roof. Nothing seemed cheap at all to me. It seems so over the top.
Yeah, it was jaw dropping the first time I went too, because I'd been dreaming about it for years, and I had a lot of luck with like a very cool selection of houses. I think particularly American Werewolf in London and Cabin in the Woods were probably my outstanding.
I watched a lot of videos from last year. Evil Dead House, I thought.
That one was really, really cool too.
I would say that was my favorite one that I watched.
Yeah, like the coolest cool because it had that really neat scene where you're actually literally walking in through the Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
You know, like the voiceover's telling you about it. Yeah, that was a really special house too.
It also seemed that as you're walking through, you weren't necessarily logistically walking through the cabin, but you were coming across the same character in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. I don't see that too often. I don't know if you think that's something that they have in a lot of houses, but I thought that was kind of cool.
It was definitely a lot more non-linear. I actually recently watched the video for the one they did over at Hollywood, and it was much more linear, straightforward house. Mm.
Oh, they had Evil Dead last year at Hollywood as well?
Yeah, that was like a dual park one.
Oh, okay, cool. So, Halloween, you did it up. You went down, you did it the Southern California style. Was there anything that you wanted to do down there that you didn't have a chance to?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Like,
you're like, where do I begin?
I would have loved to have gone to Dark Harbor, which is the Queen Mary haunt.
Yeah, that's supposed to be. That's the other one I've heard a lot about this year. Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's the LA Haunted Hayride, which is put on by the same people who did the Great Horror Campout that I went to in August, and huge, huge fan of that experience. So I would have loved to have seen them do something a little more traditional.
What is that? I'm unfamiliar with it.
Which one?
The Hayride. There's
the Hayride. It's basically a kind of traditional haunted hayride slash. They have like two or three mazes that go along with it.
Okay, no, I haven't heard anything about that and all the haunt coverage.
Yeah, they're really fascinating. There's this company that does, they're like basically kind of an event company that puts on haunts. They actually got funding through Shark Tank.
Oh, cool. They were on the show?
Yeah, they were on the show. They brought out a bunch of monsters and stuff, and I think Mark Cuban actually donated, you know, put in a whole bunch of money towards it.
Interesting. What's the name of their company?
1031 Productions.
Okay.
Yeah, so they do that, and then they did like what I went to, which was like the Great Horror Campout, which is like an overnight haunted scavenger hunt type of thing, which was like absolutely insane. And they also have this other one they do called Ghost Ship, where you basically go on like a cruise out into the harbor, and then when you're on the ship, monsters come out.
Oh, and all these things are in L.A.?
Yes. Well, the Great Horror Campout's kind of a touring thing. Would have loved to have gone and done that. Of course, there's also a couple other things. There's like, there was a Purge thing that's supposed to be really cool. There's something called Delusion out there that's supposed to be kind of like a haunted play. That's kind of an interactive thing. And there's also Blackout. I don't know if you've ever heard of Blackout.
Yeah, I've heard of all of these things.
Blackout, I don't know if I could do Blackout. Like, I'm a pretty big horror experience nut, but Blackout's, like, I think probably the bridge too far for me.
I feel, and just to sum up this whole topic here, and Blackout is something where, to sum it up, you get, you know, I don't even know how to sum it up. Whatever. There's this whole new subgenre of extreme houses.
Right.
Where you're basically paying people to psychologically torture you one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that really has got nothing to do with Halloween. I feel like that's taking it way out of my personal interest. Because what I like being in the immersive environments, you know, and
right,
you know, and encountering all of things that, you know, from the IPs, from the movies that I love, and seeing these crazy effects in front of me, and I feel like that's about something totally has nothing to do with that. I mean, it kind of gets bunched all together as the same thing, but I feel like this has got nothing to do with Halloween or even horror culture for that matter. I think it's just
it's fear without the fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Because I like getting scared, but I like getting scared in a way that's obviously fantasy.
Right.
And that's, you know, what most of these are is like, you know, like, okay, I'm, you know, like, yeah, you know, this zombie or demon or whatever got me. But I know that's not real. I don't, but, you know, like, I don't want to get waterboarded or something like that. That doesn't sound.
Yeah, I mean, for some people, their life's, like, too sweet, so they need some crappy stuff happen. But I have enough crap to deal with, so I don't need to pay people to torment me. That's my unfiltered opinion of those type of experiences. So, yeah, I'm not really interested in that either, and I'm not interested in really covering it for the show either, because it's got nothing to do at all with that. This is, like, psychological torture. That's just sadomasochist, really, I think. So,
like, my dream someday is, like, I would love to have, like, a job or be, like, in a situation where I could afford to spend most of my Octobers just, like, going around and finally checking out all these different, like, seasonal haunts you hear about. Especially because I'm kind of deprived here because Oregon doesn't have a whole lot of that.
Well, the fun thing about it, too, is, I mean, of course, it'd be great to do all this stuff, but in one season. But, you know, there's different stuff to try out each year. You know, there's so many things going on, you know.
Yeah, and I think trying to keep a balance is important because, you know, I think it's possible, especially after this last trip, I think it's possible to you can burn yourself out on haunts if you do it too much. Hmm. And so, I mean, I think it's good to pace yourself.
Well, it's good. I mean, it's good to throw some Disneyland in the middle of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Although I didn't really do that, because like I did like Knott's Scary Farm, and then I went home, and then I basically just went. You know, all I did the next day was go to Halloween Horror Nights. So it's just like two nights of haunts right in a row.
So yeah, that might be a little much. Yeah, my funny observation of going to Halloween Horror Nights one night and then Magic Kingdom the next day is that the similarities is that all you hear is screaming, you know. There's teenage girls screaming at Halloween Horror Nights or children. The screaming is the same, it's just the background music is different.
Yeah.
That was my observation for less than, you know, 12 hours apart of experiencing both of, you know, closing a night at Horror Nights and then being at Magic Kingdom in the morning. And like, I still hear screaming nonstop. So you have you were on the Friendly Neighborhood Fanboys, which was a radio show in Oregon, but you guys have decided to cross over to cyberspace And you changed your name a little bit. So why don't you talk about your upcoming podcast you have coming around?
Yeah, hopefully within the next week or two, we're going to be launching a brand new podcast, which is going to be kind of the podcast version of our old radio show, which was Friendly Neighborhood Fanboys. It's going to be called Geeks Are Go. We're still kind of getting our hosting site up, but you can certainly check us out on Facebook. Just look up Geeks Are Go. We're the only thing there. And we will be announcing just as soon as our first, you know, where our first podcast is up, where it is, how you can listen to it. Hopefully it'll be, like I said, within the next week or two. So definitely go and check that out. Also, another quick plug is I just recently started writing for a video gaming website called Middle of Nowhere Games, which is, that's the website, middleofnowheregames.com. You can check out my writing there too. So right on.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming back hot off the tails of your recent trip, sharing this with all the Creepy Kingdom listeners.
It's a pleasure as always, James.
Excellent. Thank you once again to Adam for sharing his fun tales. You can find his podcast on Facebook by searching Geeks Are A Go. I'd like to remind you again of our upcoming meetup, November 7th at Trader Sam's at Disneyland, 10 p.m. It's going to be pretty awesome. So if you're in the area, definitely drop by. You can RSVP by going to ckdlmeetup.rsvpify.com. And if you can't get enough of listening to me talk, you could check out my other podcast, The Even James is a Podcast Podcast, which you can find at theevenjamesisapodcastpodcast.com. If you would like to contact the show, you could do so by emailing creepykingdom@gmail.com. And recently, I've gotten a lot of feedback coming in, and I love it. It's no, seriously, it's awesome. I really appreciate the feedback. So if you have any thoughts about the show or anything you'd like to hear or whatever, please, I love to get feedback on the show. So feel free. Just email me at creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pictures, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest. Whew, that was all in one breath. I did it. But guess what? You can find all that stuff at our website, creepykingdom.com. And of course, we're in the iTunes store, and we're on the Stitcher app, and we're on TuneIn. We're everywhere. Everywhere you are, Creepy Kingdom's right there. So don't worry, we're always one step behind you. That's a creepy thing to say. So we did it. 31 episodes, 31 days. I hope everyone has enjoyed all the episodes. I will be elaborating more on my thoughts of the whole month on the upcoming episode. But for now, it's time to depart. So until next time.
Keep it. I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha